the twist of a yarn is so similar to the twist of a DNA strand. That is just bonkers to me. And I never would have learned that. Like, I never would have learned that in any other way, aside from having this conversation with you after you nerded out about the physics of spinning yarn. It's amazing. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Knitting Nerdcast. This is your host, Hannah Baker, and today's conversation is with Scott Sika. He is a science outreach educator in Colorado, and we are talking about the physics of yarn and spinning. I found this topic to be super fascinating, and I learned a lot from Scott, so I hope you do too.
Whenever I say I'm a teacher, the first question is always, what grade? And then I sort of like roll my eyes because I teach all kinds of different grades. I teach summer camps. I do classroom presentations where I do a set like hour-long presentation in a classroom all over the Front Range, generally elementary and middle school. But then I also teach professional development workshops. So I teach teachers how to teach. So I'm a teacher teacher.
Yeah. Let me jump in real quick and offer that at some point in all of this, you met our beloved Andrea Lotz, who is the Interweave social media manager and who was also our guest host in the first episode. And she nerded out about the knitwear in Outlander. You two are betrothed, if I am not incorrect. Yes, congratulations.
We are fianced.
And she has taught you how to knit, correct?
She has, yeah. She tried to teach me to crochet, and I made about an 8-inch long little snake. But that's all I've ever crocheted.
Yeah.
But I'm on my second project now, and I've been a knitter for 2 years. Which is, yeah, quite the rate of progress. But
so this is kind of how we connected about like this topic that we're gonna talk about. Andrea kind of brought to me, like, Scott is, you know, really into science and he could nerd out about the physics of yarn if you want. Yeah. And I was like, yes, please. I want to know, like, what makes yarn go? What makes it work? What makes it work the way that it does? Because I work with it all the time, but I don't, you know, I've never spun yarn. I don't really know the ins and outs of just the way that it works. And so I'm just dying for you to tell me about how feedback and resonance and friction are involved.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Can you just give me the rundown of like how this works?
Yeah. So I did a pretty deep dive into yarn. I'm very much like a science nerd, but I did this deep dive into yarn. And before going down the rabbit hole of twist physics and spinning, I've spun once and I made, let's see, I have it right here. I made 1 ounce of silk alpaca and wool.
Wow.
I made a tiny skein of yarn and it came out very, what's the word, slubby or optimistically.
Like uneven?
Yeah, yeah. Optimistically, sure. You could call it boucle. it's art yarn. Yeah, it's definitely art yarn. It's got some knobby little nodules in it. But it's a long strand. It's like 62 yards long, and so I've spun exactly once, and when I started that, I realized very, very quickly what a spinner is actually doing. So they're trying to work with ratios. They're trying to figure out the exact amount of tension to have the flyer and the bobbin go the exact right different speeds so that the wheel uptakes enough, but it also doesn't like rip the yarn from your hands. So there's a very like delicate ratio that they're dealing with there, but they're also dealing with the friction of the fiber in their hands. And the resonance of their foot always keeping that the wheel going a constant speed. And
can I interrupt really quickly?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you mean by resonance?
So when you're using the treadle on a drive wheel, or when you're using the treadle on a spinning wheel, what you're doing is you're adding a little bit of energy every time the wheel is in a certain spot. So I like to think about resonance like pushing a kid on a swing. Because if you push them, they'll go all the way out and then come back to you. And if you push them right then when they're at the peak, you will add energy and then they'll go farther next time. And then they'll come back farther. And then you add energy right at the peak when they're right next to you. And then you keep going and you can add energy this way. But eventually the amount of energy you're adding every time you push them is just the same as the amount of energy they're losing from the friction in the chain and just the drag of the air moving around them. Whoa. So when it comes to spinning, when they're moving the treadle back and forth, what you're doing is you're adding the exact right amount of energy right when the wheel comes over the top, and you're pushing the treadle down when the footman is on one side, and then you're letting it go up when it's on the other side. So you're adding that little bit of energy, and it has to be the exact amount of energy that the wheel loses on its trip around from all the friction.
Oh my God, that is so interesting.
Stays a constant rate. So they're like matching that energy, and like they're probably not even thinking about it. It's just totally second nature. But they're very carefully figuring out their resonance, which is super cool.
Sweet.
So, yeah. And then, like, going into it for the first time after sitting down at a spinning wheel, that's just one of the things that I realized that a spinner is doing in their head as they're going through and spinning the yarn. And it's so much of what they're doing is just second nature. But if you start to, like, take the time to dig into exactly what they're doing, there's a lot of cool physics that comes out of that.
It's kind of like the physics of creating it maybe influenced the way that they had to make the actual tools to accomplish what needed to be done so that they can do it without really thinking about it or knowing that that's what's happening.
Yeah. So the person who's making the company or person that's designing and making the spinning wheels, they're very carefully figuring out what all these different factors are. You know, you can attach the footman to the outside of the drive wheel, or you could attach it right next to the axle where it's driving around. And one of those is going to be better than the other one. And somebody at one point had to figure that out. Or like, what type of wood they make the drive wheel out of? If you use a really dense wood, it's going to be this big, heavy thing that's going to be hard to get going. But then maybe it has a lot of momentum so that once it's up to speed, it spins at a really constant speed. But if you make it out of a really lightweight wood, then maybe you have more control and it's nimbler and you can change it on the fly much easier, but it's a little harder to keep constant. So the people who like really delved into that and figured that out so that the spinner sitting down at their spinning wheel can do all this, and a lot of the physics is already just figured out. So they just have to apply their craft and use it, and everything works better.
That is so cool. So then someone's spinning yarn and they're creating twists in different directions. Can you talk a little bit about that and like what all that means?
Yeah. So I spent like entirely too much time trying to figure out S-twist and Z-twist, and in physics they have a different term for it. It's right and left-handed. But I think I finally like figured out how it actually works. So you have two different types of twists. You have S-twisted yarn, which is most of the yarn out there is S-twisted. And I'm just going through my fiance's yarn collection, and I just looked at each of them and figured out, okay, S-twist, pick up another one, S-twist, pick up another one. And most of them were S-twist, but I did find a Z-twist in there, which is the other direction. So I was trying to figure out how to tell the difference here, and it goes by the middle of the letter. So if you imagine like a piece of yarn and it's got these beautiful twists in it, if it's an S-twist and you draw an S sort of superimposed over that yarn, the center of the S sort of goes from like the top left to the bottom right. That's the center part of the letter. So if the ridge in the yarn goes in that direction, then it's S-twist. And the Z-twist, the Z goes in the other direction. So it goes sort of from the top right down to the bottom left. And that's the direction the center of the Z letter goes.
I grabbed a skein of yarn just before this to look and see, and it's definitely an S twist.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So I have my skein of yarn that I picked up, and mine is an S twist too, which I think is most yarns that you find out there are going to be S twisted. But one of the things that Andrea is knitting right now is using a Z twist yarn. So I was able to find an example of both. And actually, I'm going to pick up the yarn that I made here, and that would be an S twist yarn. So
if you could take a picture of that.
Oh, for sure.
For us to add to the show notes so our readers can see your beautiful skein of yarn.
My beautiful skein. Absolutely.
Yes.
So yeah, that's S twisted yarn, and it's a lovely like purpley mauve color. Yes, it is. It is very, very bumpy. So that was one of the things that when I was sitting there learning about spinning, I was sitting down with a friend's mom who was teaching me how to spin. And that's something that I never would have thought of, but she just naturally turned the wheel in the direction, I think it was clockwise, to make an S-twist yarn, because she knows that's the most common. If I'm going to be knitting, then when you're knitting with an S-twist yarn, every time you, could be getting this wrong, but every time you make a stitch, you're putting a half a twist in the yarn. Not 100% sure about that. But as you're knitting, you're adding twist to the yarn. And if you're using an S-twist yarn and you're knitting in the Western method, then that will add twist to your yarn, which is helpful because it reduces pilling, it makes the yarn stronger, and as you're knitting, the twist gets tighter and tighter, so you're less and less likely to split the yarn if you're knitting in the Western method with an S-twist. But if
And when you say Western method... you're talking about using your right hand to knit to hold the working yarn, or what do you mean exactly by Western?
So this is where like I learned about the Western method last week. So I'm definitely not the person to be like the final authority on this, but I think you can knit in the Western method both left and right handed.
Yeah, I'm looking at your notes and it says that includes English or throwing, which is like using your right hand. And then it also includes continental or picking, which would be with your left hand. And then you've got another note about an Eastern method. So I think I'm going to have to go down a rabbit hole and look these up.
Yeah,
because I haven't heard them referred to in that way. But anyway, that's just kind of interesting. But continue.
Yeah, so if you're knitting, and I'm not sure if left and right handed. I have a friend who knits left handed, and I believe for her, she removes twist from the yarn as she's going. So if you're knitting left handed, you might be removing twist. So you might find a Z twist yarn that will add twist, or if you're left handed, you might be a crocheter. Because crochet works the opposite way. So if you're crocheting with an S-twist yarn, you're removing the twist as you're crocheting.
Oh, wow.
And if you have a really loose yarn, you might have actually noticed this as you're crocheting, because it's untwisting enough that you could get the hook between the plies.
The really, strands. Really easily. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe getting a Z-twist yarn, or if you know a spinner, having them spin you a Z-twist yarn, will help out with so you're adding twist as you go rather than removing twist.
Yeah, I've noticed this when I cast on, because I usually use the long tail cast on method, and you're holding two different strands of yarn in one hand when you're doing that. And I've noticed that it removes twist from one of the strands. And I've always wondered if that like affects my cast on row stitches, but I feel like I'm definitely going to pay a lot more attention to this now, and probably check every yarn that passes through my hands to see what kind of twist it has.
So
it's really interesting.
So in going down the rabbit hole, I started with yarn, and I looked at Z twist and S twist, and now I have this vocabulary for like identifying twist. And I totally ignored the left-handed and right-handed that came from physics. but I started applying this concept of twist to other things. So one of the first things I looked at was the cables of bridges, like big suspension bridges. And I was trying to find, like, what is the twist of the Golden Gate main cable? Was my first question. And I looked at it, and there are fantastic pictures of the Golden Gate being made. And when you're looking at it, every image of the Golden Gate main cable implies that there's just no twist to it. All the individual bits of metal, all the individual metal cables are all parallel to one another. But I was able to find a picture taken from the roadbed, and the cables on a suspension bridge that go from the big main cable that sort of has that like curved nature to it, the ones that go down vertically from that to the roadbed, those are Z-twisted.
Wow.
For what that's worth.
It's worth a lot, Scott.
But then, so after I figured out bridges, it's like not that interesting because the cables are mostly just not twisted. I started looking at DNA, which is my favorite twisty thing, not only because it's how the instructions of life are written, and I'm a bio nerd.
Yes.
But I also took a class in college that was really difficult, but it was bio. I can't remember the name of it.
Hannah from the future here. The class he was trying to remember was biochemistry.
Anyway, so I took this class in college, and I learned about the different types of DNA. So there's A-strand DNA, B-strand DNA, and this crazy thing called Z-DNA. So if you like picture DNA in your head, it's got these two sort of like, it's basically a ladder that somebody twisted up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of DNA, that's your normal DNA. ADNA is twisted the same direction, but it's sort of like open and weird looking. But then there's this crazy stuff called ZDNA, and it's twisted the opposite direction. And something that frustrated me was ZDNA is S twisted, not Z twisted.
No way.
And I was like, oh, cool. They called it ZDNA because that's the direction of the. No, no.
Well, why do they call it ZDNA?
Maybe they found it last. I'm not sure.
Oh, sure.
It seems like they're like, okay, the standard stuff.
That's so interesting.
Maybe they found ADNA first, and then they found a different style of it, and they called that BDNA. And then I don't know where C through Y DNA went, but it's ZDNA, which is maybe they're like, this is the last type of DNA they found. But
that is so interesting.
Yeah. And it goes the opposite direction. It's the same stuff, but it's just structured differently. And yeah, I was like, that's really, really cool. But in thinking about this class, I remembered, this is like a long draw from college, but I remembered my favorite ever transcription protein.
And okay, my favorite ever,
my favorite ever. So when DNA needs to be replicated, you have to untwist the DNA to get at the bases, the letters inside of the twisted molecule. So you have to physically untwist this thing. So if you pick up a strand of yarn, if you can find any yarn, like it's going to be the same twist as DNA because it's going to be S twisted. Wait, no, I got that wrong. So standard DNA is Z twisted,
right?
The standard B DNA is Z twisted. So if you find some Z twist yarn, you'll have the right thing. But if you sort of unwind it and pull the two strands apart, if you have 2-ply yarn and you unwind it, you can sort of like access one of the strands. And that's what DNA is doing to get all the other proteins and junk in there to actually make a copy of itself. But when you do that, you're twisting, as you're untwisting one area, you're like extra twisting the areas on either side of it.
Oh,
so
okay.
Because doing that breaks the DNA, you have to have this protein called topoisomerase. And what it does is it sits at that little spot where you're opening the DNA, and it cuts one of the strands. It lets everything downstream like untwist and relax, and then it clips it back once the transcription is done. So it's called topoisomerase, and it basically just it helps with managing the twist of DNA as it's sort of opened up, so you can get in there and make your copies.
This actually sounds like witchcraft to me. But I believe you that it's science.
Yeah.
It's super interesting.
Hold on a second, nerds. We're going to take a quick break.
It's calling to mind like this metaphor that I could create about mm-hmm. yarn being life. Mm-hmm. just the fact that the twist of a yarn is so similar to the twist of a DNA strand. That is just mm-hmm. bonkers to me. And I never would have learned that. Like, I never would have learned that in any other way, aside from having this conversation with you after you nerded out about the physics of spinning yarn. It's amazing. Which also brings me to this idea that, you know, I've been knitting for half my life, I want to say, mm-hmm. About 16 years. And I really like to learn how it works in terms of like the knitting itself and like why you do X, Y, or Z to get the best result that you can. But I've never, ever really dug in far enough to understand just like how yarn works and what twist is all about and why it's there and what it does and how it helps me in my knitting. Mm-hmm. And I think I've just kind of taken it for granted that it's just there mm-hmm. when I need it and I can use it. And I don't, you know, I haven't had to understand the way that it works in order to use it, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's an infinite number of examples that I could point to where I don't think about how it works. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So being home a lot, I started to make sourdough bread. And so you can go online and you can find like step by step, put this amount of grams of that in here and then move it over here. And you can find these like step by step ways of making sourdough. And that's sort mm-hmm. of interacting with it at like the first level where somebody else has done sort of the deep nerdy dive into sourdough and what's happening in there. And they've come up with this process and you can start at that level. And when I made the first loaf of sourdough, it worked fine, but it was sort of closed off and it was bread. It wasn't the best sourdough that I'd ever had. But after learning at that level, I sort of did a deeper dive into what's actually happening. So mm-hmm. I read a book about it and then just watched all of the videos on YouTube that I could find about it and a bunch of different articles until I was trying to figure out like when the lactobacillus is going to take over from the yeast or what conditions, and like getting to that level, mm-hmm. you sort of understand what you're doing at a deeper level. And mm-hmm. even if you're not like a naturally curious person, like I am, mm-hmm. where learning something is an end unto itself. But
right.
even if you're just really passionate about something, learning some mm-hmm. of the science and physics and background of that thing you're really passionate about gives you another perspective or gives you another lens, and it deepens your connection to that passion
and your appreciation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I've been in a little bit of a knitting slump as of late because
that's all right. We all go through them.
We've all been there. After my hat, which was a nice little spiral and it was pretty easy for me to memorize the pattern, I started doing a scarf. So now I have more factors to look after. I have to figure out what's the right side and what's the wrong side. Mm-hmm. And the pattern is a little more complicated because you're doing different things within the same row. So mm-hmm. I started this project and at first it was just ribbing. So that's nice and easy. You can sort of chug through that. But then mm-hmm. after I got through the ribbing at the end of this scarf, this basket weave pattern started taking place. And I did one round of this basket weave pattern, set down my knitting, and left it for like 2 or 3 months because yep. I just wasn't in the headspace to get mm-hmm. through it. And I was trying to figure it out and I had to really focus and concentrate because I didn't have the pattern memorized. So I couldn't do it while watching something or listening to an audiobook. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sort of at that stage where I could just roll through it. But now that I've gone through this and like learned how yarn is made and how spinners introduce these different factors into the yarn and what they're actually doing to maintain the gauge and make sure that the plies are twisted a different direction than the, or the yarn is twisted together in a different direction than the individual plies. So everything is balanced. Once I started learning about that, I started picking up my yarn again and I started picking up my knitting because now as I'm going through, I'm looking at the yarn and sort of pulling it apart and trying to figure out, okay, which bits of this are cashmere, which bits of this are wool. Do I have a Z twist or S twist yarn? And it just makes the process more interesting and engaging because I'm not listening to an audiobook right now because my is my focus is all on the knitting project. So it's definitely helped me sort of get back into my project, just learning a little bit of extra information about how it's made.
For sure. And I feel like on that note, there is a lot of value. I mean, I love sitting and knitting while I'm listening to something or watching something. But I still have those moments where I'm like, okay, I have to get back into this project and I can't be multitasking while I'm doing it. And I find that if there's something, because that still happens to me, like I'll set something down and I'm like, I am not in the mood to start that again. But if I give it like 5 minutes, if I give it 5 minutes of my attention, I can feel like the ease again of like getting into it, even if there's like a little bit of challenge or something and I have to wait to put on my Netflix show or whatever. That's just a side note that I relate to.
for those first 5 minutes when you're just focusing on your knitting, it can be like almost meditative. And when I was doing some of the diving down rabbit holes in learning about spinning, apart from all the like fanciful names for things that spinners have, small tangent, but I just love that there's things called Lazy Kates, the Mother of All, Footmen, the Nitty Naughty. I ran into something called the Hairiness Index in researching this.
What's that?
So
what is that?
I was learning about knitting. We'll get back to the main point here in a second, but the Hairiness Index, if you take 1 centimeter of yarn and measure all of the protruding fibers in that centimeter, and divide the two, you get the hairiness index.
Okay.
And this thing surprised me because the hairiness index of, if you have a hairiness index of 2, that's really, really fine, tightly spun, like really together yarn. And I've seen hairiness indexes of 12, which seems bananas that there'd be 12 centimeters of sort of extra fluff on the outside of yarn per single centimeter of finished yarn length. So it's like the hairiness index. Let's see, going back, fanciful names of things, maidens, lazy Kates.
Nitty Naughty.
The Nitty Naughty.
I love the Nitty Naughty.
Which I never found like a cohesive, agreed upon spelling for. I've seen people that call it like a Nitty Naughty with a K-N-O-T, Nitty Naughty, N-O-D. I saw N-I-D-D-Y. I saw K-N-I-T-T-Y.
Okay.
All kinds of people.
I've always seen it as N-I-D-D-Y-N-O-D-D-Y.
Yeah, I saw that.
I don't know.
I saw pretty much every perturbation of Nitty Naughty.
That's great.
Let's see. Going back. Oh, yeah. So you were talking about the sort of focusing in on your knitting for a couple of minutes in order to get in the mode where you can sort of start watching something and get into the mode of knitting. But in looking at all these videos and background research in spinning, I saw time and time again spinners talking about, well, you just start spinning and then all of a sudden, like 3 hours has gone by, 7 hours has gone by, and it doesn't seem like anything. And I can't think of many hobbies that are that, I guess, like you're sitting down and you're not like doing a marathon or like you're not moving that much, but to have something that is that engaging and, you know, to have something that's that engaging for that amount of time is really cool. And it kind of speaks to what they're actually doing during that time, because you do have to have this sort of constant maintenance of all these different factors in order to produce the yarn that you eventually want to knit or crochet or weave with.
It lends itself very well to flow state.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I experience sometimes when I'm knitting. If I'm knitting something, actually, it can be mindless or it can be hard. Or I can be like working on a design and I'll, you know, kind of end up in flow trying to figure out something and doing the math and all of that stuff. I need to learn how to spin. Sheesh.
The worst thing is when you're in flow state and you're in flow state with knitting when you should be in flow state with something else.
I'm distracting yourself with the flow of knitting.
Yeah.
And you need to be in the flow of doing the dishes.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But yeah, you should absolutely at least try spinning, because figuring out how yarn is made, taking it one step lower, right? One step closer to the origin of the product,
right,
teaches you more about knitting. So, you know, the one time I spun, my thinking was, well, I need to go learn how to like shear a sheep so I know where this ribbon came from.
Absolutely.
Or I need 100% to know how to dye wool.
Yes. Right. And I, you know, I've talked to people who started out as knitters and then got into spinning, and they say, you know, they tell me like this is a whole other level of nerdery that brings a fresh appreciation to your knitting, because you can just appreciate so much more.
Yeah.
The work that was put into creating that thing. It's kind of funny. Like I also think about, I mean, I like to nerd out about stitch patterns on things that I see. So if I go, I talk about this all the time. If I go to Target or Old Navy, they have great sweaters at those stores, beautiful sweaters. And I'll see something that's knitted, you know, it's machine knit, obviously, but it could pass for hand knitted. And I like want to figure out like the stitch patterns and how to make that thing. And there are so many people that, and this is not like a criticism or anything, it's just like the majority of people don't knit. And so they will, you know, might see a sweater in a store and they're like, oh, that's a nice sweater or whatever. But my appreciation is at the level of like, oh, like I know how that sweater was put together, even though a machine did it.
Absolutely.
So there's just like all these layers. And also this is like inspiring me to look into the science of things that I don't think about on the day to day. I don't ever think about how things work. And we just take for granted that all this stuff is just, you know, it just works because someone's figured it out and we don't have to worry about it. And that's wonderful. So we can spend our time doing other things, but that appreciation level comes into play when you just learn how something works.
Yeah, this learning about spinning and already sort of being able to knit. I'm a very novice knitter, but I can do it. But learning about spinning has made me want to like go down the rabbit hole and get all the way to the origin. It's made me want to shear a sheep and then dye the wool and then spin the yarn and
do the whole thing.
Yeah, you talked about this extra step of like figuring out the pattern and actually designing the pattern of the garment and then knitting something. And if you have an object that you knit from a design that you made, from yarn that you spun, from wool that you dyed, from a sheep that you sheared.
Amazing.
That would be a really, really cool object to have. And knitting and fiber arts is one of these hobbies that has a very short chain of skills to make something totally from scratch. I just think that's really, really cool. I mean, if you wanted to make a pencil from scratch, you'd have to learn forest management. You'd have to learn chemistry and paint bonding and rubber vulcanization and mining and metallurgy. But to make a knitted object, that's something that with good teachers and some interesting skills, you can make something totally from scratch. And I think spinning is one of the cool steps in that process.
Definitely. And if you think about if you're going to make your knitting needles from scratch, that's a whole nother thing too.
Oh yeah. You can take that concept as far as you can.
Yes.
Making your own knitting needles would be cool. That sounds like a fun project. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know somebody makes, there's a company that makes knitting needles out of used pens, I think.
Okay. Cool.
Recycled pens. So yeah. you could figure something out with that, mm-hmm. but making them from scratch, that would be also an interesting endeavor.
Yeah.
Wow. Wowee. Well, with that, I feel like I have a whole slew of new information to go into the world with. I feel like you've opened my eyes. Yarn is life.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yarn is DNA.
Yarn is DNA. Yarn is my DNA. Into it. Well, thank you
that's
so
a, that's
much,
a very poetic
Scott.
Note.
You know, I gotta try to wrap it up with some beautiful metaphor that everybody can apply to life, right?
Yeah. Yarn is life. That's perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to do this massive research project and to sit down and talk with me today. So
absolutely.
Well, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and yeah. It was great talking to you.
You as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Remember, you can follow the link in the description to our website, where we'll have lots more information about this topic. If you like the show, please tell a friend, leave a review, spread the word. The Knitting Nerdcast is a production of Golden Peak Media and Interweave. It's hosted by me, Hannah Baker, and produced by Jared Mayer. Shout out to Andrea Lotz, Jen Ryan, and Laura Holzlander for their contributions. This episode was recorded and edited by Evan Rutherford and Jared Mayer.